Radio the New Millennium. I'm Catherine Davis, and this broadcast is in collaboration with the We campaign at we.net, and our objective is to bring together issues in ways that they cross each other's path for women, as well as health concerns and all those things that are connected to it. So that's family, friends, mothers, daughters, sisters. And so we have a wonderful group here, including a mother and daughter team is joining us. But I'm going to let each of us just take a sentence to introduce yourself. So why don't you start, Sue?
Sure. I'm Sue Blythe, and I am the coordinator of the Campaign for Environment with We the World, and it's really a delight to be here, especially with my daughter Susanna.
Yes, and Susanna, introduce yourself.
I am Susanna Saidi. I live in Asheville, North Carolina. I am a stay home / work from home mother of two, homeschooling mother of two, and Sue's daughter.
Nice. Sharon?
Hi, I'm Sharon Rhea. I'm out here in Scottsdale, Arizona. I am a family relationship coach. I work with families raising teens and after divorce and single dads. And I'm also the founder of a global movement, No Judgment, Just Love. And in connection with Catherine and Sue, I am the coordinator for the We Campaign for Unity.
And Jason.
Hi, I'm Jason. I'm from Brooklyn, New York. And I joined the We campaign about a few months ago, working with Catherine on these podcasts.
Excellent. And so why don't we start out with Sue and tell us a little something about yourself and your daughter and how it relates to all that we're speaking of today.
Thank you, Catherine. So I am a grandmother. I have two little granddaughters and a bunch of boys. And I was thinking about this topic. Here it is, Women's History Month, and I have some history because I came up, actually, I like to start with my mother. About the time that she was born, women got the right to vote. And that was monumental in the story of women, especially in this country. And then as I was growing up, I remember my mom telling me that, yes, you will go to college because you need to have something to fall back on in case your husband can't take care of you for any reason. And so when it was time for me to go off to college, the choices that I believed I had, I realized there were more, but in my mind, the choices were I could be a teacher or a nurse, or do something to make me a better homemaker and mother. And so I chose to be a nurse. quickly learned that the chemistry was beyond me, so I became a teacher. And so I've been an educator all these years. During the 60s and early 70s, I was part of that Equal Rights Amendment. Well, the whole women's consciousness was happening at that time, and the idea of support groups was new. And so I was part of that ERA movement and was just one of those that was so heartbroken when it was the two houses of Congress passed the Equal Rights Amendment and it went out to the states and it was not to pass and still has not yet to this day passed the Equal Rights Amendment. And so, but in that time, I had just completely changed my attitude about who women are in this world and what we can expect of ourselves and our children. And then I started having children and wanted to raise them with different attitudes. And I remember one of the children's songs that I played in our house a lot, I don't know if you remember this, Susanna, was a song by Red Grammar, and it said, with two wings, we can soar through the air. With two wings, we can go most anywhere. With two wings, we can sail through the sky. With two wings, we can fly. I am one winged sister and mother. All by myself, all I can do is flutter. I'm only one wing, I need the other for the dove of peace to fly. And then, I am one wing, father and brother. By myself, all I can do is flutter. I'm only one wing, I need the other for the dove of peace to fly. And so, I just felt like we are in a new era where women and men are equal. And I just wanted my girls to believe that. And so I'm going to turn it over to Susanna and see what, how that came through from her point of view.
I do not remember that song, but it's very sweet. And for my point of view, growing up, I felt very empowered and passing that beautiful gift on to my children, and that we can do anything, and the, you know, the world is your oyster, and whatever you put your mind to, you can and will do, and that career-wise, you know, the sky's the limit, right? For my generation, I'm 41 years old, and we can do and be anything that we should choose. However, as a mother, my oldest is about to turn 10. And I quickly found when I had my own children, I was making good money and had a career that I enjoyed. It wasn't anything that I felt really passionate about, but I made plenty of money to support myself and my husband at that time. And then we got married and now we have two incomes. And then we got pregnant and I realized pretty quickly that I wanted to be home with my babies. I didn't want someone else to raise them and I didn't want to go back to work at six weeks old. And so I realized real quickly that there's a stigma attached to being just a stay-home mom, that you are not enough, that's not good enough. And staying home with your babies is the easy, lazy way out, it kind of felt, which is the opposite of reality because it is incredibly hard to be home with babies and mentally incredibly challenging and physically, emotionally, spiritually, all of it, you know, and there's, it's not only is it very challenging in society to just be home and that's all you do is now you're just a stay home mom. But it's also very hard to support ourselves on one income. And so now we have this pressure to work outside of the house, have the career, have the house, maintain a beautiful home, take care of your children and be at all their soccer and scheduling and all the things, pack them a healthy lunch and make them a healthy dinner, and also be working all day. And it's not realistic, and it's not, I mean, without, I mean, we're just driving ourselves crazy. We don't have the village anymore. You know, the grandparents live separately in another state, and we've spread ourselves out so thin that we have this responsibility as mothers to not only fill the role that used to be filled by many people, but also have the career and make the money, because otherwise you're not going to make it. You're going to, you know, be in debt and never have savings. And it's just an interesting shift in one generation. And I was talking to my mom about how I always think back to my grandfather, my dad's side, my paternal grandfather worked at Sears as a manager. He had 9 children and they owned their home. And she stayed home. She was a stay-home mom for 9 children. And they owned their beautiful home with a pool and a trampoline and forest in the back. And it was just a magical place and big house that fit 9 children. And that doesn't exist today. A manager of Sears with 9 children would be on food stamps and would have to have subsidized housing. And it's just, it's such an incredible jump in one generation from my father's childhood to, or, you know, hit one generation later when he's having children to when I'm having children. It is incredible. So I guess it's 2 generations of children ago, but what an incredible shift in our society. And I feel like the pressure gets, you know, of course there's a lot of pressure for the husbands, but for the moms, for the women, there's so much pressure to perform and now fill so many roles. So that's what I have to add. I feel very, very lucky and blessed and honored to be able to spend as much time with my children as I can. And we have figured it out and we live a modest, wonderful life so that we can all be together and that I can be with them and we travel and have a really fantastic life and filled with happiness. And I'm super, super grateful for that. And it is very different from when my mom was growing up, very empowering. And then also we've kind of tipped over to the other side where the empowerment has gone towards, I don't, responsibility in an unhealthy balance. So there's that. That's my 2 cents.
Well, that's very powerful. I think I love the way you talk about having worked, but then really valuing your family and deciding that that would be the priority. It's a rare gift to even have that option. So I think that that's really wonderful. But how, if you have a few more moments, how do you manage? And now that you're homeschooling, what is that like?
Well, we've always homeschooled. We have always homeschooled from the beginning. And actually what happened was I had a birth center birth with my first baby. She was born out of the hospital at a birth center. And I went through midwifery care at a beautiful birth center in South Florida. And the owner of the birth center does birth classes before the babies are born. And you're required to go through her class. And so one of the things that she does that was completely life-changing for me was she held up a shoestring and she says, this is your baby's entire life. This is the birth and this is the death. And this is their life right here. And this tiny little section is the first 5 years of their life. So be home with them. Just stay home. It's such a tiny little piece of their whole life. But if you need to just move into an apartment, live very modestly, be poor, do whatever you can do, be home with that baby. And I thought, okay, I will do that, because I was in figuring out how are we going to do childcare? When am I going to go back to work? What is that going to look like for us? And so we decided to take a big shift. And we put a lot of faith into things are going to work out. You know, it's going to be okay. And we're going to have tough patches, and there'll be rough spots, and there have been. And, you know, financially, going down to one salary, and that we were going to make do, and we're going to figure it out as we go along. And we have, and it's been great. And we're always kind of hustling something on the side, you know, there's like little jobs in between the big jobs, and there's always something changing and moving pieces. And we're just, really open to what's available and possible. And then we live real modestly, you know. I make all our meals here, and we don't spend a lot out, and we travel quite a bit, and we travel and we stay with friends or family, or we have, you know, we wait until an opportunity arises for us to, that we can't say no to, instead of frivolous spending. So we have a really great life, and it's super rich and full and wonderful, and also very modest.
I'm very much accustomed to a modest lifestyle. So I get that. I live on a retirement, and it's not very much, but I'm fine. You know, everything goes well, and it's actually a very, I won't say carefree existence, but when you have less things to pay for, you're buying less, you're worried less about things, that leaves room for you to enjoy life much more. So I can very much relate to that. And it's wonderful for your children. Certainly when I grew up, I had a stay-at-home mom. And it made a significant difference. So I'm wondering how your children are responding to your attention and care. How?
I mean, they love it. They don't want to be anywhere else. It's, you know, the three of us. My husband travels a lot for work. So it's always been the three of us, and they feel very close and connected to me. And we have, we follow self-directed education or agile learning method of schooling. And so the kids, you know, we're learning alongside each other every day, and I follow their lead. The world is our classroom. We are out, you know, discovering and turning things into lessons every day, all day long. And it's what they know. And so it feels really comfortable and wonderful. And if they want to go to school tomorrow, they know they can. It's up to them. This is their life. And so for now, they want to keep going and doing the things that we're, you know, following the same pattern that we have. And what we do is we're home, and then we'll take off and go somewhere for a few weeks or a couple months at the most. Sometimes we've been out of the country for a couple months at a time. And, you know, being out of the country, you're spending even less, and there's no healthcare costs. And there, you know, we can really live modestly in South America or something, you know, where our money goes further. So it really, their life and their experiences are incredible. And then we come home to this wonderful house that we have in North Carolina, and we just feel so happy to be here. And this is where we plug back in with friends, and it's just a wonderful, wonderful life. And they seem very, very happy. They're thriving.
And since we're talking about multi-generations, what has the impact of your mom been on your life?
That's a great question. I think that my mom raised us with nonviolent communication and peaceful parenting before it was a thing, before people even knew really what that was. And so she broke a lot of the of the toxic patterns that were passed from generation to generation in so many families. And so it really set us up for success in our life to have such an incredible foundation to then raise our families and follow what makes us feel happy and fulfilled instead of, you know, how we'll make the most money and have the biggest house and the best car. And those kinds of things weren't what we were after. And, you know, there are times in life when I wondered, is this the right way? Because I'm watching all of my friends that are, you know, they have the big career and the big house. And it feels like, you know, you're trying to do the keeping up with the Joneses thing. And I realized that it's not how we were raised, and it's not what's important. And it's what my mom and dad taught us was that, you know, to follow your heart and be true to yourself, live your life with kind, loving intentions, and, you know, speak to people with kindness, be helpful, be loving, be good. And then all that comes back to you. And so I just feel like, you know, we are incredibly blessed in so many ways, and we also are very generous and giving and kind and loving people. And I think that that comes from being raised that way. And so what you put out into the world, you get back. And so I think that mom really set us up for success in that really, what's really important in life and all those wonderful teachings. Thanks, Ma.
That's wonderful. So would any of you like to respond?
Actually, I'd like to jump in. Everything that you just mentioned, Susanna, like, I mean, that's kind of how I was raised. My mom stopped working after my sister was born, so she's kind of been a stay-at-home mom most of our lives. And definitely the story with the shoelace, I thought that was really interesting. And I can't imagine my life being the same way that it is now without having my mom home, you know, taking me to practices, taking me to rehearsals, making me do my homework. Like, it's really difficult when you got to do these things alone as a kid. And I was blessed not to have to do that. I know some of my friends, we definitely talk about our upbringing. They're like, oh, you, like, your mom's always all over you, like, you gotta start living on your own. But I mean, she laid down the groundwork for me to succeed. And pretty much, like, I'm a college student now, so everything's kind of in my hands now, even though with all this pandemic situation, I've been at home. You know, I could still feel her impact on my life and how I take care of myself, how I take care of business. And I think it's just, it comes down to making the necessary sacrifices and setting a good foundation.
I also wanted to just quick add that the same midwife that had the shoestring story, she also said that there was no one in the world that wants any that wants the best more for your children than you do. Not your mom, not your sister, not your favorite friend, not the best nanny or the best childcare provider. No one can provide the love and the support, and nobody has your child's best interest in mind more than you, the mother. So the more time you can spend with those children, the more of that they'll receive. And that's setting them up for success in life.
I thought that was great. Yeah, that's wonderful. And I really love this conversation, Susanna, because as you said, the stay-at-home mom does not get the respect that they deserve. So I'm very happy to have you on to share this, because really the whole world is depending on mothers to be able to provide for their children so that children can continue to add to the world. And it's really, really important. And it's unfortunate that not all mothers, even if they wanted to, can.
That's right.
Because maybe they don't have the partner, or there's not enough income, and they just don't have that choice, and their best option for their child to survive is to work. So I don't want to give any impression that one is necessarily better than the other kind of parenting. I think that parents do as best they can, depending on their circumstances.
That's right. And I would also like to add that it is not for everyone to stay home and to be a stay-home mother. It is not okay for every woman to do that. And some women are just more career driven, and they are going to thrive, and their children are going to thrive with help and with some kind of childcare, and the mother is going to work outside of the home, and that is going to be the best possible scenario for that family. And I think that that is wonderful. And to have the option is what we need, and for it to be able to be honored equally, and not that, oh, you're the career woman, so, and you're just the stay home mom, or, oh, you've left your children all and it feels like being able to make that choice is the really important part of where we're at here.
Absolutely. I totally agree. And, you know, I think not every person has the temperament to stay home. And we have to open up the space for the husband to stay home if that's his temperament, and let the woman go out and do the work, because that's more what she has the capacity to do. And I think if people work with each other, they can create what's best for their family. And you're right. Every choice needs to be honored and respected. So I totally appreciate that. And I really love that you are here with us during this conversation. Sharon, did you want to say something in response or a question?
Oh, I have so many things to say. First of all, I want to thank Sue and Susanna for great conversation, because I have a whole different experience with some similarities, but I just respect anybody who takes on homeschooling. That is a big task all by itself. Forget about all the other things that you're doing in your family's world, because I thought about homeschooling, and both of my daughters said, no, you can't do that, Mom. Please, please don't homeschool us. There are things that I know well, and there are things why they need to go to school to have somebody else teach them. So kudos to you. And to Jason and Susanna for having Sue, for you and your mom, to be able to be home. And Sue, for you to have the foresight to insert this living that I'm uncovering now back then for your children, with nonviolent communication and having a safe and loving environment and understanding that you're valuable in the world and all of those wonderful things that Susanna talked about. So don't worry that she didn't remember the song. It's okay. you know, as you're talking, Susanna, and I'm glad, Catherine, that you brought in the generational aspect of it, because even though my mother only lived with me for about 4 months when I had my first daughter, which was extremely traumatic for me. Having my grandmother and her around when I was younger and looking at their lives from a little girl who just wants to play and be free in the world perspective, but having some analysis of it as I got older, you know, she wanted a career all the time, my mom. My grandma did not want a career. So that juxtaposition of two different women in my world, one that was very much a homemaker and one that was very much a businesswoman, I think gave me a different view of what the possibilities of women could be, Sue. So I had more, you know, awareness that I could be more than a teacher, more than a nurse, more than what the 1960s, 70s, 50s careers that we were offered. And although I wanted to be lots of different things, turned out to continue to be lots of different things, they were the model for me for that. But I also, and I say this with great reverence and respect for my parents, especially my mom, because my dad worked and there wasn't this, like you say, Catherine, having the man be home. That was not him. He was not a parent that was parenting for the children. His parenting perspective was, I provide and I keep you safe, and that's my job. And everything else is your mom's job. But I don't recall clearly that they did the mental health part of raising a woman, a young woman. It was mostly structured around, here's what you do in the world, here's how you have a home, here's how you treat your neighbors, you know, but there was not a lot of what I find valuable now, focus on who I am as a person and a woman in the world, and a Black woman in the world. And so when I was having our children, and we have two daughters, and they're 6.5 years apart, which is 6 years and 11 days, sorry. And that's a big difference. It's like having two only children at two different times in my life. And I was an older mom, had our kids in my 30s and late 30s. And I was a professional woman in a professional occupation when our first daughter was born. And I could not wait to get back to work, because she had colic and I did not want to be home, and it was in the woods and my mom was living. It was just like I had postpartum, I was hospitalized. It was just a horrific, horrific time of the beginning of her life. And so I chose to go back to work, and I worked 2 hours away from our home when I lived in New York. And as a lobbyist, it was 3 hours and 3 days because I stayed overnight. So it was not possible for me to be a stay-at-home mom. So we had a wonderful couple of women who became our sidearms with our first daughter. And they took great care. One of our nannies was from Poland and didn't speak any English. So I kind of worked through her sister, and she and my daughter, Lindsay, learned English together with Sesame Street. That was pretty, pretty cool. And then our second daughter came, and we now were no longer in New York. We had moved out here. And Susanna, you talk about something that has become a little trigger for me when we say our parents or our mothers want the best. No one else can want that much of the best for our children. And where I agree with that 1,000%, my former husband, and we are no longer married, we were married for 21 years and we've been divorced for 11, had his idea of what was the best for our children. And it was polar opposite from me. So it was a kind of confusing thing when I think as a woman, not having been fully empowered by my generations before me, to be able to stand in my strength and say, you have a perspective, my dear husband, of what is best. And I have a perspective that's vastly different of what is best. And both can be honored in our family. But that's not what happened. I had to succumb and give in. And I felt very unable to protect our daughters in particular, because his personality was so right, wrong, strong. And if you didn't agree, you had the hurricane around you. And so what I found myself as a woman, and Catherine, when we're talking about health, I think mental health has to be a component of that. Because whereas I know we provided a physical safe environment, we lived in Scottsdale, it was not a problem. He was a lawyer. So we had all of the things we needed physically. But the emotional and the mental strain on all of us, including him being opposite from me, I'm sure was a mental stress for him. What's wrong with her? Why won't she just agree with me? Well, a lot of times I did, to the detriment of raising our children as a mom. And so I think that it is not only the wonderful opportunity of women being able to be a stay-at-home, and I did the same thing you did, Susanna. I'm a stay-at-home slash work at home. I work at home. I'm just not staying home. Parent, is that we are becoming who we are. And I think how we were raised, and Sue, again, I honor you, how we were raised gives women a strong mental health stance to thereby give that to their young children, their girls in particular, and their young boys. Because if you're not a strong woman, mother, you don't know how to raise a strong young man either. So kudos to your mom, Lillian, who I've met, Jason. And so I found myself really not wanting to be there, even though I understand the shoestring. My gift was not when they were little. My gift was when they became teenagers. That's when I felt it was important to stay home as a mom, because I had discovered all of the misconceptions they had about their strength growing up, not only because I wasn't there, because I was presenting a strong female image for them, but I wasn't there fully in their life. I was gone for 3 and 4 days in another place. And so I felt it was a privilege for me to stay home during the teen years, because that's when their brains start judging themselves and evaluating the world and their place in the world. And are they strong enough and worthy enough to be there when that wasn't being modeled at home with the relationship that my former husband and I had? So that shoestring, I think the whole continuum is valuable. There are some that will resonate with a little bit birth to five. There are me that resonates with the teens, and there's some that are excellent parents of adults, and some just run the gambit. So I love the imagery and to taking each part of that shoestring to say always, always be there for your children.
That's wonderful. And Susanna, I believe I heard that you had to leave a little bit early. So if you need to, that's fine. If you need to take off a little bit, if you want to have some closing thoughts, or you're welcome to stay.
Well, I would love to, but I really do have to run, unfortunately, because, you know, working from home.
No problem. Thank you for joining us.
It has been so wonderful, and I wish I could stay on. It has been so, so wonderful. I really enjoyed it. And I just would like to add that without my supportive, loving husband who was willing to make changes as I saw fit, because I was the one that was putting in all of the hours with the children, and he was sometimes leaving for weeks at a time for his job when they were really little. And so when he would come back, I would have to give him a debriefing, you know, like, we don't talk about the red pony anymore because she lost that, so don't bring that up. We've moved on there, you know, they no longer like this book, they like this book. There was he would just clock it all in and step right in. And he kind of, you know, I was the one reading the books, and I was the one spending all the time trying to become like the best mom and the best parent that I could possibly be, and putting in the time and the effort. And he was so respectful of that and honored that in such a beautiful way, and asked, you know, how can I do better, and what's your opinion of how we can work through this? And, you know, he was just really fantastic. And I think that without that component, and without the mental health aspect of it being addressed, like with birth trauma and without having support and those kinds of things, that everyone's story is so different. And so, you know, I definitely recognize that the path that I'm on is not everyone's path, would not be healthy for so many people that I know and love. And I just think that it's so important for us as mothers and women to honor all the options and all the paths and be supportive of each other. And that's it. It's been wonderful being on. Thanks so much, Mom. Love you.
Thank you. Bye-bye
now. Thank you so much. Sorry to have to leave early.
So that was lovely, Sue. Do you want to reflect on that, on this so far?
My goodness. It's just, I am, talk about blessed. I have three daughters, and they are all just whole and healthy and happy. They've, got men in their lives that are, they are the two wings, you know, that they each have their own relationship and they're different. All three of my girls do homeschool and they stay home with the kids. In fact, they call it world schooling because they just go out into the world and meet each other in different parts of the world and spend time there and learn the culture and language. And it's just phenomenal. And what a gift to a mom to see her girls grow up. And I have eight beautiful grandchildren who are all just, you know, they've got those wonderful hearts and it's just a delight. What a joy. Lucky me.
Well, that's wonderful. I happen to be a woman with that has no children, nor do I have I had a marriage. I've been kind of solo, so I've been functioning as a independent-ish woman in the world. I have three brothers, though, and they've always been very protective of me. But I do want to honor my mother as well, because my mother was sick. She had multiple sclerosis, so she wasn't able to move around and get around, and I was more of her caretaker than she of me. But on a psychological, spiritual level, she gave me everything she needed because I don't think I ever felt unloved or inadequate or unable to do anything. So she was able to encourage me to get out into the world, to make my mark, to do what I wanted to do, to create in whatever way I wanted to create. And as I've gotten older and I've met women who had problems in their relationships with their mothers, that I've learned just how grateful and how blessed I am to have had a mother. And in my entire life with her, I don't think a single day went by where she didn't say, I love you, be careful. You know, there was all these blessings bestowed on me by her that kept me safe in the world and kept me confident. And so I think that a mother's love is significant. And when women, or men for that matter, don't have that relationship, may have lost their mother early on, or they have a mother who has emotional or mental issues, it becomes a real struggle in life. And it's really important. A lot of what we're saying here is important for us to do for ourselves, for those who don't have or haven't had that kind of really supportive relationship. We almost have to homeschool ourselves in self-support, self-love, nourishing, and really, in a way, stepping back from having had those early life challenges and understanding that it doesn't say anything about us as individuals. So I have that kind of relationship with my father. He wasn't present for most of my life. And after I became an adult, I realized that I had to separate what his life was, had to do with his experience and his childhood and who raised him. And so I had to step back and realize that I could forgive him for not being there. And then I could begin to cultivate that myself in a way that I didn't feel like there was something wrong. Because so often as a child, you take responsibility for the parents' failures. But I think that that's something that needs to be healed. It's not just in the mind. We really have to work through and understand and just view that parent from the perspective of, yeah, they're also a child who maybe didn't get what they needed, and you're sort of downstream of that, so as not to have to be resentful of that parent or angry at that parent, and be able to nourish yourself. And I found it was necessary in order to be able to have healthy relationships, to heal my relationship with my father. So I just wanted to bring that up, is that not everybody has this environment of nourishing and love. And I do honor you, Sue, for providing that for your children. But I want people to understand that they can also provide for themselves in the same way. So I want to open up for a few more comments from all of us and see how we want to go further. Sharon?
I think it's really healthy to continue to explore motherhood as a topic from all of the different vantage points. You know, we have four people here, had five on the call, and everybody had an interaction or relationship with their mother that was different. And, you know, not to exclude the dads, but the moms in particular, I think we in our world get messages more often than not that says, you're not important because you're supposed to be here for everybody else, which doesn't really give us a chance to say, but how can I do that if I don't matter? And I think that this is a healthy conversation, Catherine. So I don't know if it needs to continue. Maybe we fleshed out everything right now, but I think it's really healthy of Sue and Susanna to bring this up for this particular show.
I agree. It was wonderful. Sue, Jason, any thoughts?
Well, I'm just grateful to you, Catherine, for setting the stage for this conversation. And it has really been a good experience for me and two of my daughters that I invited. One was not able to join us, but we got a real good conversation out of it. And so I love the way you just set the stage for whatever comes up, whatever people bring. And I thank you.
You're very welcome. So, well, that's good. We don't have to belabor it. We can come to a conclusion. But, you know, I would just say, as we are coming to the end of this particular conversation, that we think of ways to explore it, expand it. I think motherhood is really a nice place to start when we're talking about women's lives and we're talking about Women's History Month, because as much as it's nice to venerate successful women, this is a good place to start, because without that generative care that we get in the beginning, it becomes very hard to go on to lead a successful life. So it's important that we mother ourselves as well as mother each other, as we realize how important we each are. And that's the message, that everyone brings value. That's the mother energy. That's the earth energy. The sun nourishes us every day. The earth feeds us by what it grows. So I guess we'll close.
One more thought to add, and that is that if you want to consider continuing this in some way, Mother's Day is not far off in May. What is that? The first month Sunday in May? I'm not sure. Anyway, but it's just worth thinking about, well, what could we do that would be appropriate for Mother's Day?
I think that's wonderful. That's a great idea.
Women's History Month. From Women's History Day or International Women's Day, we've expanded Martin Luther King to a month. How about we expand Mother's Day and Father's Day to the old month of May for moms and the month of June for dads?
Yeah.
A few days ago, from an athlete, and he was like, why do we have to devote a month or a certain day to honoring people of like different backgrounds, or mothers, fathers? Should be every day.
Yes.
And we need to make that a reality, because he's right. Why are we devoting 1 month? What's so special about this month that's not that, you know, we can't do this every day?
Yeah, I totally agree. I totally agree. And it would change society, wouldn't it, if we were considering these things all the time and honoring each other, honoring our parents and ancestors. It would change everything. So I agree with you, Jason, and that would be a great way to go forward. But in the meantime, we do what we can.
We'll take it one month at a time, baby steps.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But it's important to weave that into the conversation, because even if we're doing something political, that's also can be part of the conversation of why we have so much conflict in the world. It's because we're not doing what Jason is saying. We're not really honoring each other's humanity. And that's the big we beyond the we that we're speaking of. We.net is one selection of we that are working together to change the world through our 11 campaigns. But there's the whole collective of the planet that hopefully we can have an impact upon through our actions, but also through the energies that we generate into the world and opportunities for people to connect with these thoughts. So I'm grateful to all of you and all of our guests today for joining in this program. Thank you very, very much.